I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and live toxic free. Today is Tuesday, March 17th, 2015. So happy St. Patrick's Day. I hope everybody's wearing green and not getting pinched. Actually, I'm not, but there's nobody here to pinch me in this room right with me right now. But I will remember to wear green when I go out today. We're going to have a different kind of show today, which I think is very interesting and important. My guest is toxicologist Dr. Stephen Gilbert, who has been on, he's on every month. And I have him on because, I mean, we live in a toxic world. We need to understand the issues of toxicology. And usually we talk about things like how mercury is affects your health and things like that. But today we're going to talk about something completely different, but needs to be discussed probably more than anything there is in the entire field. And Dr. Gilbert actually suggested that we talk about this subject, and he sent me a article from National Geographic called "Why Do Many Reasonable People Doubt Science?" And some of the things that it says in this article, just I have things to say about them. And I'm sure Dr. Gilbert does too. This is so important because, well, I'll just start by telling a little story and then we'll get to Dr. Gilbert. This is so apropos to me right now because in my work as a consumer advocate, I am writing about decisions that I make about products based on information about whether something is toxic or not toxic. And so in the past, there wasn't a lot of studies, but there were things that people had written. Some of it was studies, some of it was couldn't find the studies, et cetera, et cetera. And so I might read something in a secondhand context, and then I would take that secondhand thing instead of looking at the actual study, and I would use that information. Now I am making a huge point to actually gather the studies, and I'm working on actually a new website that's going to have the studies on there so that you can go look at the studies and that it's not somebody's opinion. And I'm running into something in my own work right now where a question came up about, in fact, do mattresses, innerspring mattresses, the metal in innerspring mattresses, amplify EMFs? Is it more dangerous to sleep on an innerspring mattress? And when I started looking at yesterday, in fact, I gathered all the data that I could gather from all the different sources. And I found that there was a lot of secondhand comments about this. And that there wasn't actually, it came up because somebody actually measured the EMFs off of a mattress and said, hey, wait a minute. There's no change in the EMFs. I measured the EMFs in the room. I measured the EMFs coming off the mattress, and there was no difference. So what's the big deal? And anyway, it's a very interesting place to be in time nowadays where we're needing to make decisions about what's healthy, what's not healthy, and where's the data, and who's saying what, and what should we believe? Okay, Dr. Gilbert, hi.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. You're absolutely right. It's really hard to know what to believe anymore, and industry has played upon that.
Well, I first want to say, before we get into this, I want to say that I read this article that you sent me, Why Do Reasonable People Doubt Science? And I'll put a link to it on the page with your show. But it starts with a story about in Dr. Strangelove, the movie Dr. Strangelove, they were talking about, this was in 1964, there's a whole scene at the beginning of this article where they are talking about fluoridation, and at the time, the health benefits of fluoridation had been established, and the anti-fluoridation people were already talking about why fluoride was bad. And then in this article by National Geographic, it says, actually, fluoride is a natural mineral that in weak concentrations used in public drinking water systems hardens tooth enamel and prevents tooth decay. A cheap and safe way to improve dental hygiene for everyone, rich or poor, conscious brusher or not. That's the scientific and medical consensus, except they fail to say that it's not natural fluoride that goes in our water.
Yeah, that's fluoride's a good example, and I think it raises some interesting ethical questions, too, because it's the only compound that we deliberately add to a water supply and expose everybody to it, and we don't even know how much people are being exposed because people drink different amounts of water. And the product is actually not systemically active as far as teeth goes. It has to be topically applied to teeth. So it's real curious how that whole issue has happened where we have widespread fluoridated water on very flimsy evidence.
Yes, and there, wouldn't you say, I mean, as a toxicologist, wouldn't you say that there are a lot of studies showing negative health effects to fluoride?
And yes, I definitely do, and I'm opposed to fluoridation of water. I think that there's plenty of fluoride in toothpaste and other products that I think we have to be aware of and acknowledge, and there's no reason to continue to fluoridate water given the potential neurological effects, the effects on the bone, and other problems with fluoride. Causes a number of health effects that I think we should be very cautious of, and we should take a precautionary approach. And they've never done the backup study to really document the health benefits of fluoride at the doses they're doing. And there's actually some real efforts to reduce the recommendations in the water to 0.7. And, you know, we in Europe has mostly moved away from fluoridating water. And we just, again, not addressing the facts.
So I think this is actually a perfect example. And I was actually shocked to read this when I read it in National Geographic, because I thought that they were going to move towards saying, and so, you know, there's all this evidence that fluoride is bad for your health, and yet people continue to fight to have it in our water. But they said exactly the opposite. So I think this is a perfect example of exactly what the subject is we're talking about today.
Yeah, it is a good example, and it's an example of how the, you know, Center for Disease Control and other you know, reputable organizations have bought into this and not kept up with the facts. I think that the huge change was putting fluoride in toothpaste and other products, so there's really no need to dose the water with fluoride and expose people all across the country to fluoride and drinking water at different doses and exposures and not take accountable for the adverse health effects. And then we're getting the benefits of fluoride in our toothpaste and other products because fluoride works best when topically applied. So it's an example of not addressing the facts of the science.
Okay, well, tell us more about this whole issue about people doubting science.
Well, you know, it's a really, really important issue because we're confronted with this, climate change being the current big example of this. But I just want to read a quote here. This is from 1969 from a tobacco executive, and the company is currently owned by R.J. Reynolds. But the quote is, and this is from the industry slogan for industrial disinformation campaign, and the quote is, "Doubt is our product. And it is the best means of competing with the body of fact that exists in the mind of the general public." Now, I'll just say that again. Doubt is our product, so that's the product they want to create. Since it is the best means of competing with the body of fact that exists in the minds of the general public. So really they're trying to create uncertainty, play on the doubt, and science is about asking questions as a scientist. I love science. You continue to explore. Your doubt is what you sort of trade in a sense, but we're not addressing the facts and the body of evidence that leads to good decision-making. And industry and many other groups have played upon that and delayed regulatory progress, degraded benefiting public health by just emphasizing the uncertainty of the issue.
And we need to go to break, and we'll talk more about this when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert. He's the director and founder of the Institute of Neurotoxicology and author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. And he's at toxipedia.org. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is toxicologist Stephen Gilbert. And he is the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. And if you go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com, you'll see the book cover. You can click right there. This is a free download, and it's a book I've said many times that everybody should have. It just gives you the basics of toxicology in very easy language and points out some of the most toxic chemicals that you should be watching out for in your daily life. Okay, so Dr. Gilbert, before the break, we were talking about how companies use doubt to counter the facts.
Yeah, it started off, you know, the National Geographic article says, why do many reasonable people doubt science? And that was really why I suggested this topic, was because there are a lot of seemingly science doubters that are not looking at the science that is produced and just going with their gut, or they're going with other interests. And industry's been doing this for a long time, playing on the doubt by delaying regulation. But why are there so many science deniers in our congressional representative? Why do we listen to Inhofe, who brings a snowball into the Senate floor and says climate change is not happening? And, you know, when the evidence is that it is, and scientists around the world are documenting climate change and the huge impact it's going to have on our society, and yet people turn away from this. And there's many, many examples of this. And the other thing that I just want to quickly mention was that the Merchants of Doubt book that came out a number of years ago, there's now a movie called Merchants of Doubt. And I've watched the trailers. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I really recommend this documentary that looks at the industry's efforts to create doubt, delay regulation. Tobacco industry is one of the classic examples, but there's many others, such as lead, and I was involved in some of the early lead research, and was confronted some of these facts, what industry did to try to confuse the issue and delay regulation, delay removal of lead from gasoline, which is probably one of the greatest public health measures ever taken. One of the worst public health decisions was putting lead in gasoline.
Right, but I think that this, it's the same battle over and over. I mean, if we just look at lead in gasoline, removing lead in gasoline, it's the same process, or cigarettes, you know, banning cigarette smoking in public places or things like that. That, for every chemical, every toxic chemical in consumer products has to go through that same process of people understanding that there's a toxic danger and then deciding that it's not going to be there anymore. That it's not going to be there anymore for all of us. In the meantime, each of us individually can do something, but each of us need to individually decide for ourselves that it's toxic and it's something that we shouldn't do. And I was thinking earlier this morning that it's like, I think that everybody would agree that you should be careful when you cross the street so that you don't get hit by a car. And although I'm sure there are people who don't look both ways before they cross the street, but it's something that we understand is a danger and that people take precautions about that. Yet many, 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 the majority of people do not take any precautions about toxic chemicals, that they don't believe there's a problem. And I just can't understand that.
Well, I think, you know, our industry, and this is where industry really comes in, because they've created a lot of doubt about these issues, where, you know, their motivation is making money from the product. You know, right. They create a lot of doubt about smoking, a lot of doubt about, we could just go down the whole list of chemicals. Flame retardants is another recent one, where the industry hired a physician that told this egregious story about a child being burned alive because of lack of flame retardants. And told that it was entirely false. But there's lots of money to be made from these products, and they convince people that just to ignore the issue. We don't often know what chemicals are in our products, and we should have a right to know. And I think industry's done a good job of not allowing chemical policy reform, which is what some of this comes down to in our use of drugs. When we go to the drugstore to buy drugs, industry has done a lot of work, and the Food and Drug Administration and other government regulatory agencies require a lot of scientific investigation of their products. That's not the same thing with industrial chemicals, and that's where Toxic Substance Control Act comes into play, and not having good precautionary approach to adding chemicals to the environment. And industry then takes advantage of that and argues exposure is not a big deal and we don't need to tell us what's in the products we use. And what we're being exposed to is not a problem when it is.
Yeah, it's just kind of amazing to me that there's so much. When I started many years ago studying the regulations of how different products were labeled, it was amazing to me that how inconsistent the labeling regulations are. For example, there's a whole different law for how you need to put a warning label on a sheet of particle board because of the formaldehyde. But as soon as you cut it up and make furniture out of it, it's a different labeling law, and you don't have to put the warning label on it, and you don't even need to say that it's formaldehyde. It's just, there needs to be one labeling law that says everything that's in the product needs to be disclosed. Period.
Yeah, that's real. It's a huge issue, and you know, personal care products, you know, from fingernail polish to other products, we don't know what's in them. You know, fragrances often use phthalates as carriers, and phthalates is a well-documented endocrine disruptor. Do we really need these products? Do we really need all this chemical exposure? You know, having antibiotics in our soap doesn't do any good, but industry likes to sell it as the safe thing to do, and it has no documented advantage. So the list just goes on and on, and I think that we need to be really aware of this, and we need to push our representatives to enact regulatory policy that helps protect and prevent disease and not wait till we have disease and then have to try to cure it. But we need to be conscious of what chemicals we're exposed to, and we have a right to know about these chemicals and what it is. And this comes back to how science is played on this issue, because science does like to ask questions. The industry takes advantage of that by not focusing on the facts, by not building consensus, but rather just tearing consensus apart. So then we do another study and nothing gets done.
It's kind of like there's, you know, two forces. We could call them good and evil, but I'm not trying to say that industry is evil, but there's like the people, there's a force that wants life to survive. And then there's this other force that's saying, oh no. And there's like this fight between these two things. And it would be just great if everybody could say, we should all be doing the things that make us healthy and happy and protects the environment. That just makes sense to me. We need to go to break, but we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is toxicologist Stephen Gilbert. He's at toxipedia.org, a very interesting website with lots of data on it. And he's also the author of A Small Dose of Toxicology, The Health Effects of Common Chemicals. And you can get that book for free as a free download. Just go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and you'll see the book cover. Just click on it and it'll take you right to the page. Right back. You're listening to Toxic Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert from Toxipedia.org, and we're talking about what to believe with all this information on the internet and different points of view. How do we know what's true and what's not when it comes to toxics? And Dr. Gilbert had sent me an article from the National Geographic, Why do Many Reasonable People Doubt Science? And you know, I have to say that I'm looking at scientific articles all the time, and I'm assuming that so is National Geographic, but we have very different viewpoints. And this article from National Geographic is in favor of fluoride and GMOs, and saying that that these are perfectly safe and fine, and anybody who is a naysayer is, well, why are they doubting the science of it? And Dr. Gilbert, would you just comment on how people can be, you know, that there can be all this data and so different points of view, such different points of view?
Yeah, that's a real struggle, and I think that the different points of view come from starting at different perspectives. I just want to come back to the thing that science is always incomplete. And I want to read a quote from Sir Austin Bradford Hill, who said, and he did, and this was from 1965, and he did a lot of work on tobacco and health effects of tobacco and smoking. He says, all scientific work is incomplete, whether it be observational or experimental. All scientific work is liable to be upset or modified by advancing knowledge. That does not confer upon us a freedom to ignore the knowledge we already have or postpone the action that appears to demand at a given time. So we're really saying we have to have a precautionary approach, take the action, even in the face of uncertainty. And what the industry does is play upon that uncertainty and delay action because it's to their benefit. So I think one thing you have to ask is who's benefiting. In 2009, I wrote an book review for one of the books about this subject, Doubt Is Their Product, Industry's Assault on Science Threatens Your Health by David Michaels. And this was published in Environment Health Perspective. And it's a great book. It goes right along with Merchants of Doubt that creates, again, manufacturers uncertainty. So I encourage your listeners to at least read the review of that book, but pick up one of these books and sort of look at how industry has worked very hard, hired experts at communication to advance confusion about the subject. You know, there's example after example where they just create uncertainty, and that delays the action because then people say, well, we need to study it more. We don't know enough to make good decisions. And what I've done, a lot of my work on Toxicopedia and other work, is trying to document, put our scientific information in the context of history, society, and culture, and say, we have enough information to take action. We need to take a precautionary approach and take action, even if we're not 100% certain. Because in science, it's very difficult to be 100% certain. There's always advancing knowledge, advancing information.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've had to figure out as a consumer advocate, the reason, for those of you listening who don't know, the reason I do this work is because I got very sick in my early 20s to the point of being disabled. And I was able to discover a cause and effect between my symptoms and exposures to toxic chemicals and consumer products. And so I didn't start by saying, gee, I think I'll go look up the science about toxic chemicals. I started with not being able to get out of bed in the morning, having symptoms all day long, being so sick that I was disabled and couldn't work. I couldn't function in my life. And it was through my detective work and discovery of the toxic chemicals that I was being exposed to that I got my health back and I got my life back. Nobody was talking about it then, and I decided that I needed to tell the people about this so that, because there's no reason for people to be sick. If you know where the toxic chemicals are, if you know how to replace them with safe things, then you can take that action for yourself, regardless of what the government does or doesn't do, and you can have a healthier life. It was only after the fact, after I made this connection, that I started looking for studies. And what I found out, I started studying chemistry, I started studying toxicology, I started studying health, and what I found out is that it's very difficult to it's very difficult to say that something is toxic to every single person in the world at every single time, because there's the inherent toxicity of a chemical. And there is what happens in your body as a result of the exposure. And there are many things that affect that, how much you're being exposed to, how sick or well your body is, what your age is, how many chemicals you already have in body burden in your body, et cetera, et cetera. And so you could line up 100 people and have them all have the same exposure, and they would all respond differently. But there, go ahead. Do you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So, but the thing is that there are toxicology studies which establish the toxicity, the inherent toxicity of a chemical. And to me, I mean, if you've got organizations around the world that are saying, you know, we're studying these chemicals and we decided that they're toxic and they shouldn't be in products, why do we need to wait another 10 years for legislation? Why do we need to study them more? Why do we, you know, it's like the data is there. Why not just be prudent about it?
Because somebody's making a lot of money and keeping that product in play.
Yeah.
You can just go down a whole list of these things, like atrazine, a herbicide, is widely used around corn. It's banned in Europe, but it's used in the United States because the manufacturer has been very good at creating doubt about the effects of that product. And some people say it's a really great product, so we've got to keep using it, and industry keeps promoting it. So, you know, it's just, you know, benefits, they are different perspective on the benefits, and usually it's making money from the product.
But why is that? Why does the world run on that money gets to win? Why are we not running the world on how do we keep life going?
Well, I think that, yeah, I think that's one of the things our society really needs to struggle with is our industry is set up that their focus and their perspective, and tobacco industry is a great example of this, is they want to increase their profits and externalize their costs. And usually you increase your profits by selling more product, reducing its cost. You externalize the cost you don't want. Industry, the tobacco industry, again, as an example, externalize the health cost of tobacco onto the public health care system, while reaping all the benefits and the profits.
Well, that's
a great strategy for many companies.
We'll talk about that more when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And my guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert. He's at Toxopedia.com. Toxopedia.org? I don't have it right in front of me. Which one is it? Toxopedia.org. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Talk Radio. My guest today is Dr. Stephen Gilbert from Toxopedia.org, a fabulous site that, as he said earlier, puts toxics in the context of history and social and what's the other component?
History, society, and culture.
History, society, and culture. And it's a very interesting site to read. And just I really appreciate it a lot. So before the break, we were talking about how toxic products stay on the market because businesses are making money. And making money, having profits, and minimizing costs that's what runs the world today. And so things like health and sustaining the environment are less of a concern. And, but to me, what makes sense is that if you want to have good health, then you have to take the actions that create good health. If you want to have an environment, which we all need to have in order for any of us to be alive, including all the corporations and manufacturers, without the environment there, then none of us would have life. And yet these two things are not generally at the top of the list of what needs to occur. And I'm not saying that that's true for every business, but what I see, particularly in more recent years, because I've been watching this for 30 years more and more, is that these issues are, or these concerns, I should say, are becoming more part of business in recent years. And that I do see businesses thriving who are making non-toxic products. And I'd like to see everybody follow suit.
Yeah, I think it's really critical that we have some regulatory changes. And I encourage all your listeners to engage in the legislative effort to modify the Toxic Substance Control Act. TSCA reform, chemical policy reform, is really important. There's bills up for Congress right now about that. It was greatly weakened by industry, and the environmental community is now opposing the chemical policy reform bills as currently stand. But that is our only avenue, is to try to work through the legislative process. And we're confronted by really well-paid lobbyists and communication experts that cloud these issues and create doubt. And to do, you know, it's a great example, Merchants of Doubt, the book that just, it's not a new book, it's a few years old, but the documentary is really new and it just came out, and I urge you to take a look at that and get fired up about this issue to protect our health, protect our children's health, because we're exposed to a raft of chemicals. Endocrine disruptors is a great example of that, where they have a common mechanism of action. We're exposed to many chemicals that affect our endocrine system. And you add all those things up, it might be very small exposures, but it can lead to a big effect. And I think the other thing we've learned about toxicology in the last few decades is that small amounts of a chemical really matter. You know, lead that way, bisphenol A, other products that are chemicals that are in their products do matter. These small amounts really do matter. It's important to protect ourselves from being exposed to these things.
So I think I read something about there's a new bill that's being introduced. But one of the things about a lot of these bills, isn't it that they say that, you know, the EPA needs to regulate more chemicals and, you know, 10 over the next 20 years or something like that. And that's just like 10 out of 80,000 is...
Right. Yeah, it's
very strange. We need to have some kind of action that happens faster.
Yeah, we do. Well, I think we have models for that. You know, I mentioned that the drug industry has we take a very precautionary approach to putting new drugs on the market, where we require industry to document the potential negative effects of drugs as well as the beneficial effects. We don't have a similar policy when it comes to putting industrial chemicals out. Flame retardants is a great example of that, where we didn't need all these flame retardants. Now, flame retardants are biocumulative chemicals that are all over the environment and showing up in women's breast milk. And we're now trying moving from one flame retardant to the next, when they're actually showing that most of these things do not do any good in the products. But industry likes producing chemicals. That's how they make their money. And they want to put flame retardants in products. And it's just not good for the long-term health of our society. So you just see this again and again. In industry, we've documented that they do not support regulation and you know, reducing exposure to chemicals, do not support transparency of what chemicals and what products, what levels. And there's book after book that goes through industry's work on this issue. Another good one to look at is Lead Wars by Markowitz and Rosen. There's a book by Deborah Davis called The Secret History of the War on Cancer. And if you're interested in endocrine disruptors and bisphenol A, a book called Is It Safe? By Sarah Bogle. So there's lots of information out there, but what we really need is to force industry or force legislators to make changes that are protective of human health and put more emphasis on people's health and not on the profitability of these corporations.
I totally agree. Another model that I thought of while you were talking is the whole organic model of organic food, where they have to go through this whole process in order to get certified and write a plan that says every single thing that they're using, and it all gets reviewed to see if there's anything toxic. Now, why couldn't we have the National Organic Product Program? And why limit it to food? Why not have this kind of scrutiny and this review and this intent to make a safe product be part of every kind of product that's on the market?
Yeah, that's a really good question. We should have more of that. We should have more transparency. We should not have to bend over backwards and have environmental groups trying to figure out what new flame retardants are added to a product or what chemicals are in our products. We should know if there's phthalates in our products or there's fragrances or there's other chemicals and not have to be forced to guess or do the research to figure this out. We need to have industry working with us and health to be a priority for them. It's really a difficult issue, and I think that the only way it's going to change is through legislative action, a real shift, and more of a precautionary approach taken and expected of the chemical industries and the product manufacturers.
Yes, I think that needs to occur. I'm trying to think, you know, like how well I can see, since I've been in this field for 30 years, I can see that consumer demand has played a large part in the past 30 years of people saying, I want less toxic products. And so whatever product isn't toxic, when they start showing more sales, then the larger corporations want to jump in and have something like, well, here's an example. So you can now buy Heinz organic ketchup. And, you know,
right.
I don't think Heinz decided that they were going to be the leader in organic ketchup. It was only after years of smaller companies saying, well, we're going to offer this organic ketchup, having enough sales, and then Heinz saying, well, we better get in the organic ketchup market. And I see that in different companies deciding, you know, Walmart selling organic produce, things like that.
Yeah, but how much more expensive than organic produce than other products?
You know, I think that's
an environmental justice issue. Who can afford these products that are, quote unquote, less chemically, have fewer chemicals than organic foods is an example of that. But why can't everybody have organic food and have that be the norm and not the exception to the rule?
Exactly. That in a society that values life, that would be the case. That I mean, it's like our legislature should be going to Washington and saying, okay, we want to make sure that everybody in our state can have organic food available to them at a reasonable price. And that we shouldn't even have non-organic food on the market at all. People shouldn't even have that choice. Let's just make all the food organic. What a difference that would be.
Well, it's just the same struggle that occurs over labeling a product, genetically modified organisms, and food that's GMO. You know, the industry has fought labeling of that very effectively. You know, they fought it in California. They fought it in Washington State. They poured huge amounts of money to make sure we don't label our products to know whether they're GMO or not. Mm-hmm. And that's another example of industry thinking, well, it's just going to confuse the public. And my view is we have the right to know what we're eating and what we're putting on our body and what chemicals we're exposed to. And industry thinks that's just going to confuse the public, and it's not helpful for their bottom line.
Yeah. Well, we've only got about a minute left. So any final words you'd like to say on the subject?
I think that the most important thing to do is to get involved and take a precautionary approach. We need to have the precautionary approach taken seriously in our products and in exposure to chemicals. And I read more about these issues and get involved. Write your legislative folks. I think the consumers have a super important role to play. And we need to be thinking of our children, because our children have a right to reach, maintain their full potential. And that means them not being exposed to a raft of chemicals that they are now.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. And
you're doing this, Deborah.
You're welcome. So I just want to let everybody know that I've been doing some work on my website. And if you go to toxicfreetalkradio.com, you can go to, there's a bar with a submenu. And if you hover your mouse over listen to archive shows, you'll see that you can listen to all the archive shows, but also my regular guests like Dr. Gilbert have their own pages now, so you can just click on Stephen Gilbert and it'll take you to a page where all his past shows are linked on one page. And it's worth listening to these past shows. It's worth educating yourself about toxic chemicals. And we have to go. You've been listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. Be well.